Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our press call today. The topic is the U.S. Navy's use of domestic biofuels in a major maritime exercise. And as a matter of fact, the Great Green Fleet demonstration is taking place off of the coast of Hawaii starting today. Here to talk about this is Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and the Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus. And we should be joined by Deputy Assistant to the President for Energy and Climate Change, Heather Zeichel, in a few minutes. Reporters, if you'd like to ask a question of either of our two secretaries, please let us know by pressing star 1. And with that, I say good afternoon and turn it over to Secretary Mabus.
Well, thank you very much, Tom Vilsack. Thank you also for everything you've done. Yesterday, off the coast of Hawaii, was a great day for the Navy and a great day for America, a remarkable achievement in energy innovation. It marked some serious steps to take us on the road toward energy security and energy independence. It was a unique opportunity for the world to watch our highly skilled sailors and Marines do what they do best. And it was also a unique opportunity to witness in an operational setting the absolutely seamless integration of advanced biofuel and energy efficient technologies in some of the Navy's most sophisticated air and sea platforms. One point I want to make was that absolutely no modifications were required or made to any of the engines that were burning biofuels. I'll give you just a few details. I, the Chief of Naval Operations, the uniformed head of the Navy, the head of the Pacific Fleet, and the head of the Third Fleet arrived on the USS Nimitz, an aircraft carrier, on a helicopter flying on advanced biofuels. During the course of the day, every type of aircraft that the Nimitz flew was launched and recovered, and it flew on biofuels. There were in-air refuelings between F-A-18 Super Hornets and other F-A-18s. There was also an air-to-air refueling with one of our Prowlers, our electronic attack aircraft. I also went over to the USS Princeton, which was doing a refueling at sea from the Henry J. Kaiser, and it was taking on biofuels. It was the second underway refueling that the Princeton had done. It took on more than 200,000 gallons of biofuel, and it was running on biofuels when it was done. I think the participation of the very top leadership of the Navy was a strong signal to the men and women in uniform, to our allies, and even to the skeptics that the whole Navy is committed to pursuing alternatives to foreign oil, and the whole Navy believes it's critical to our combat capability and to our national security. When we went to the USS Chafee, a destroyer, we received a briefing about energy efficiency technology. And this includes things like replacing regular light bulbs with LED lighting, using voyage planning tools to take advantage of tide and waves and wind, use cleaning engines while they're running instead of having to take them offline, and putting stern flaps right behind the propellers of our ships. If you put these energy efficiencies on every one of our ships fleet-wide, we could save up to 1 million barrels of fuel a year just from being efficient. And that would translate into, at today's prices, about $150 million in savings to the Navy. I'm also very pleased that the Royal Australian Navy participated in the Great Green Fleet. The Royal Australian Navy flew one of their helicopters to the Nimitz, where it was refueled on biofuels, and I signed a statement of cooperation that was also signed by Australia's chief of their Navy to guide us on how we can best partner together as we go forward. And what this showed was that this isn't a concern just for the United States. In virtually every country I visit, There is concern about energy independence. There's concern about energy security. And the fact that we signed this agreement with one of our closest allies and that they are so committed to this effort as well speaks volumes to the need for an alternative to the price shocks and the supply shocks that fossil fuels can be subject to. I also got a chance to talk to a lot of the sailors and Marines. There was a great quote in one of the articles from a pilot, Lieutenant Commander Jason Fox, and he said, "I've been in the Navy 13 years, and I've never been involved in something this historic. I'm hoping someday I'm going to look back, and this will be the point where we turned away from dependency on fossil fuels. There have been many steps that the Navy leads the way on, and I'm hoping this is one of those steps." Everybody there realized that they were involved in something historic, and every sailor on board those ships, every Marine on board those ships, knew that we were taking a step for energy independence. We're pursuing alternative energy because our reliance on foreign oil is a very significant and very well recognized military vulnerability, and we are trying to address that vulnerability. As the Navy prepares to meet the new defense strategy that was announced in January, a strategy that is maritime-centric, focused on the Western Pacific and the Arabian Gulf region, requires a global naval presence using very innovative, low-cost, light-footprint engagements. Energy security has got to be at the top of our agenda. The ability to use fuels other than oil and gas is absolutely critical to our energy security. It'll increase our flexibility, it will increase competition, and it will reduce the service's vulnerability to rapid and unforeseen changes in the price of oil. I've said this over and over again, but every dollar change in the price of a barrel of oil means about $30 million in additional costs to the Navy. The Navy has been presented with a bill at one point this year that totaled almost $1 billion in additional fuel costs. Some of that was met just by moving funds around from Afghanistan to meet fuel costs for the Pentagon. But if we do not do something to tamp down these price spikes, there are only a couple of places we have to go get the money for additional fuel costs. One is to operations, which means we steam less, we fly less, we train less. The other is to take platforms away, ships or airplanes. And I don't want to have to make the choice, and I don't think anybody wants to have to make the choice between steaming the fleet and fueling the fleet, or between steaming the fleet and the size of the fleet. That is just not an acceptable choice for America's security. We can increase our combat capability. We can do it with absolutely no change in the equipment that we have today, the airplanes, the ships, all the equipment that was running on biofuels yesterday. There was absolutely no difference, and as I said, absolutely no change in these engines. I think that this demonstration of the Great Green Fleet, which went on all day yesterday and which will continue today and will wrap up today, is going to continue the legacy of the Navy leading in energy transformation from wind to coal, from coal to oil, and pioneering nuclear. This is a core Navy competence. This is what the Navy does, and this is one more time when I believe that we will make this change in order to make us a more effective military force, in order to reduce a military vulnerability. Thank you.
Ray, thanks very much. This is Tom Vilsack. I just want to echo a number of comments that Secretary Mabus indicated and sort of reinforce the message. But first of all, I would like to thank Secretary Mabus for his leadership in moving this Green Fleet opportunity forward and being a very strong spokesperson for the importance of making our Navy less dependent on foreign oil and more dependent on our own resources. Very consistent with the President's all of the above strategy, the Navy is leading the way. And as Secretary Mabus talked about the Navy's evolution in terms of energy, I can't help but think of my Uncle Charlie, who was the commander of the second nuclear submarine in our Navy, the USS Thomas Edison. And here, in the span of my lifetime, I see once again the Navy providing leadership. And it's not just leadership to make us more secure from a national security or energy security standpoint. It's also leadership in terms of economic opportunity in rural areas. To the extent that we're using algae or other feedstocks like switchgrass or miscanthus or even cooking oil, we're creating new opportunities for the development of a bio-based economy, which will play to the great strengths of rural America, and which will create new manufacturing opportunities and new income sources for our farmers and producers without necessarily competing with the important role that corn and soybeans play in our economy and in feeding our nation and the world. This is an exciting opportunity. We look forward to continuing to work with Secretary Mabus and the Navy and the Department of Energy to create this aviation and marine fuel industry, because we not only recognize it as a tremendous economic opportunity for rural America, but also as a job creator. The biofuel industry in the U.S. currently employs around 400,000 people directly and indirectly. And once we reach the threshold of renewable fuels set forth in the renewable fuel standard, that could actually increase to 1 million people. Those are good-paying, quality jobs. And it also, I think, creates an opportunity for competition to be injected into the fuel supply issues. Secretary Mabus indicated how difficult it is to plan for the fluctuations in oil prices. Now, we know from our own experience with biofuels that folks are paying less at the pump than they would otherwise be paying because we have a biofuel industry. And that certainly will over time be the case with aviation and marine fuel. So again, to Secretary Mabus, thanks for your leadership, and we look forward to continuing to work with you and the Department of Energy in creating this new and exciting opportunity for the country. And I don't know if Heather Zeichel's on, if she is.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. And again, I just want to echo Secretary Vilsack's thank you for your leadership, Secretary Mabus. Just a couple of quick points. I think with today's demonstration, the Navy is once again leading the nation and the world in transforming how we power the fleet. They're sending a clear message that we cannot keep doing what we've done in the past. We cannot be timid about embracing new forms of energy like biofuels that have the potential to strengthen our energy security and reduce the military's reliance on oil. For all of those reasons, biofuels have been a pillar of the Obama administration's all-of-the-above energy strategy. Even though we're producing more biofuels right now than at any point in our history as a country, there's still so much room for growth. We haven't even begun to realize the full potential of biofuels, not just from an energy security perspective, but from an economic and jobs perspective as well. That's why, as an administration, we stand firmly behind the renewable fuel standard, which we think is a critical tool to promote continued growth in the renewable fuels industry in the years ahead. That's why we've taken a variety of steps to encourage deployment of today's biofuel technologies while also accelerating the research and development of new fuel technologies in our labs and at commercial scale. Finally, that's why we view the efforts by some in Congress to undermine the military's ability to invest in alternative fuels as both disappointing and short-sighted. I believe that this successful demonstration by the Great Green Fleet should help Congress better understand the tremendous opportunity we have with biofuels to help power our Navy, mitigate key military vulnerabilities, and lead the world. So with that, we're happy to take some questions.
All right, thank you. Reporters, please let us know by pressing *1 on your touch-tone pad. Don't be shy. Actually, we have somebody that just jumped on the line, Timothy Ports with Biomass Magazine. Timothy.
Thank you, gentlemen, Secretary Mabus, Secretary Vilsack. certainly an exciting day for all of us. I was wondering if you could further articulate some of the volumes of the fuels, the types of fuels, and the manufacturers of those, or at least indicate where that kind of information might be had. I heard Secretary Mavis talk about 200,000 gallons being transferred from a refueling vehicle or refueling boat or ship, but I'm wondering if you could articulate a little bit more about the types of fuels.
It was 450,000 gallons in all that's being used in the Great Green Fleet. It was a combination of biofuels. Part was made from algae, and part was from inedible food products, basically used cooking oil. We don't have a favorite technology. All we want are the fuels to work exactly the way that that our fuels work today. But those were the ones that were used, and they were purchased last December, I believe. And one of the things that you just brought out that yesterday showed in the Great Green Fleet is how these fuels work not only in the engines that use them, but also all through the logistics chain from purchase to transportation, getting them to the end user, and they work exactly the same at every step of the way.
I might just add that the used cooking oil was purchased from Dynamic Fuels, a Louisiana-based firm, and the algae was produced by Solazyme.
Terrific. Thanks, gentlemen.
All righty. Let's go to our next caller, David Alexander from Reuters. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi. Thank you, Secretary Mavis, Secretary Vilsack, for doing the call. Secretary Mavis, much of the criticism that I've heard over the biofuels program has been directed at the cost, well, of the demonstration and the cost of the fuels using the demonstration. And I wonder that now that it's over, do you think it was a misstep to pursue the demonstration, or is it necessary to prove the concept? And secondly, now that it is over, what are the next steps in the biofuels program, and what will the Navy do to try to make it more cost competitive going forward?
Well, absolutely, it was worthwhile to show that biofuels can compete and can be used in every single thing that we do in the Navy. Now it will continue, as I said, through today. This shows that it's operational. Everything before now had been a test. This shows that we can use biofuels and other energy, alternative energies, in an operational manner. One of the things that we've always said is that we're not going to buy large amounts of these until they're cost competitive. But one of the ways they become cost competitive is by the military providing a market for it. And we've done that in technology after technology after technology. And if we only looked at cost, we still wouldn't be buying nuclear subs. We can buy four conventional subs for the cost of one nuclear sub. We can buy four or five conventional aircraft carriers for the cost of one nuclear carrier. You wouldn't be using a computer today if you only went on cost, because it's more expensive even today than the typewriter you used to use was. Same thing with smartphones versus rotary phones. You can go on and on and on about new technologies coming into the market. But the bottom line is we're not going to buy these in large quantities until it's price competitive. But one of the things that study after study shows is that we can bring competition into the fuel market, and we can make them competitive simply by using them in the military and showing. And the last thing I want to say is that some of the people that were on the carrier yesterday were representatives of the American airline industry. There were several people who came from both individual airlines and industry associations, because they need this kind of fuel. They are looking for an alternative to fossil fuels. And people like FedEx and United Airlines have already flown on biofuel blends. Qantas, the Australian airline, has also done that. And the fact that the Australian Navy brought a helicopter, refueled it on biofuels, did all the testing, did all the certification necessary to do that, and is engaged on a whole of government approach to find alternatives to fossil fuels, I think also shows that this is not just a United States issue. This is a worldwide issue, and I think that that the value of yesterday was incredibly high.
Ray, if I can chime in terms of next steps, the Navy now has proven that this fuel works, and now the question is, how can we create an industry that can produce sufficient quantities at an affordable cost so that the Navy can begin to move towards its goal of greater reliance on biofuel. That's why the Navy, the Department of Energy, and the United States Department of Agriculture are working together collaboratively to identify companies that would be willing to work with non-food feedstocks to create pilot projects so that we can demonstrate not only that it works in planes and ships, but that we can produce it at an affordable cost, and that we have non-food feedstocks that work effectively and efficiently. We have been meeting with industry officials over the course of the last several months, encouraging them to look into participating in our effort, and we are soliciting proposals right now for the first stage of this effort, and look forward sometime latter part of this summer or the first part of fall designating the companies that we'll be working with to take this to the next step.
All righty, let's continue with one more call, and that's Julia Piper with Climate Wire.
Hi there. Thanks very much for taking my question. I was earlier today just on an industry call with some solar developers who are looking at the opportunities. One of the questions that came up from them, and I think this goes sort of across the military, is how can they be sure that the military is still going to have funds and be dedicating, be willing to go forward with a lot of the projects? There was an Army Air Force industry day a little while ago. A few projects were announced, but still some skepticism as to how much these companies should get involved, since it is an intensive process and they're not sure, with potentially a looming sequester, what kind of funds will be available. What would you say to those kinds of concerns? This is open to anybody, I suppose.
Well, I would say to those concerns that the American military has identified this as a real military vulnerability, and we have got to move to meet this. Secretary Panetta has talked about this, has testified about this. Every service is working on it, as you mentioned. You look at an op-ed piece that was published recently by Senator Susan Collins, a Republican of Maine, and Senator Gene Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire, talking about the need to do this, about the absolute necessity to move on these things. And one of the things you pointed out is that these are domestic new forms of energy. And one of the things that nobody wants to do is to trade one form of foreign energy for another form of foreign energy. And if we don't keep up, if we don't keep moving on new technologies like solar, like wind, geothermal, hydrothermal, biofuel, all the alternatives, if we don't remain on the cutting edge, all sorts of other people are, and we don't want American industry to fall behind. And I think that the Navy has shown over the last 3 years its commitment. As Tom Vilsack said, the President has charged Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, and Department of Navy to come up with some of these projects. And I think all they have to do is look at the military vulnerability and the uniformity across the services, talking about the need to address that.
Thank you.
All righty. Guest, I'm just wondering, do you have any closing remarks as we come to our 1:30 deadline?
Well, let me just simply thank Secretary Mabus for, again, his leadership and for the Navy's leadership on this. We're excited about the partnership we've developed, and we look forward to continuing to help the Navy be the innovator it's always been.
And I will thank Tom Vilsack and Heather Zeichel for their leadership. This is one place where we can make this a win for everybody in America. We can make it a win for our military. We can also make it a win for our economy, and we can make it a win for our farmers. as Tom Vilsack has said over and over again, we need these new energy markets for our farmers to these non-food stocks. It's not going to take any food out of production. It's not going to take any land out of food production. It's going to help us address both a military and a national vulnerability. So thank you, Tom, and thank you, Heather.
Heather, are you still there?
Yes.
Any closing remarks?
No, again, I think just to reiterate that, you know, certainly appreciate the leadership that both Secretary Mabus and Secretary Vilsack have provided here. And I think, you know, just to underscore the demonstration with the Great Green Fleet, I think is certainly something and to embrace, and is certainly a day for the history books. And we feel really good about the investments we've made and the opportunities in the future here.
All right. And with that, everyone, that concludes our press call.